WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
I'm Chuck Sievertson. More major damage reported, houses blown apart, trees and power lines down, people in hospitals from tornadoes late today in the Little Rock, Arkansas area and near Memphis. Working at a Little Rock supermarket when the twister hit, William Williams.
Everything happened in like 5 seconds. It was like it came, boom, there was a lot of commotion and stuff, then it was just over. I go outside and it's crazy. It's people got blood all over their faces.
Tornado watches for the next hour is posted for Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, and Michigan. This hour is after President Biden visited the tornado hard-hit town of Rolling Fork, Mississippi. A twister a week ago destroying most of the small town.
We're not just here for today. I'm determined that we're going to leave nothing behind. We're going to get it done for you.
Former President Trump has been charged with about 24 counts, including felonies, say sources familiar with the sealed indictment to ABC News. His arraignment in New York is Tuesday. Wall Street had an up day. This is ABC News. Talking about his battle against depression, Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman just released from a Washington area hospital after 6 weeks of treatment.
The whole thing about depression is that objectively you may have won, but depression can absolutely convince you that you actually lost. And that's exactly what happened.
Fetterman talking to the CBS TV show Sunday morning. In another hospital, what a lucky mommy and baby.
Pope Francis seen baptizing a baby boy. He was seen using a metal hospital tray to pour water over the child, who let out a big cry as the Pope tried to comfort him. But imagine being that mother who brought her child for a checkup and then ended up meeting the Pope. Pope Francis has been improving after receiving treatment for bronchitis. He plans to be here at St. Peter's Square for Palm Sunday, and Catholics around the globe are praying that he will be strong enough to preside over the very busy Holy Week ceremonies.
ABC's Marcus Moore at the Vatican. Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
The Cripescast with me, Charlie Barron, Saturdays and Sundays at noon on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
All right, who's ready to eat? We got brats for dinner, marshmallows for dessert.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. University of Wisconsin students will see their tuition go up for the first time in 10 years. The Board of Regents approved the increase yesterday. Wisconsin enacted a tuition freeze in 2013, but UW System President Jay Rothman says the freeze is unsustainable now with increasing costs and inflation. A man accused of threatening Governor Evers is taking a plea deal. Michael Yacker of Windsor is instead pleading guilty to threatening former Wisconsin Highway Commissioner Gerald Mandley. In exchange, he had 7 other charges dropped, including sending threatening messages to Evers. He faces 5 years in prison when he's sentenced in June. In sports, the Bucks lost big to the Celtics last night, and Minnesota State's Mike Hastings is the Badgers' new men's hockey coach. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The spring election is Tuesday, April 4th. It's being called one of the most important in the country, with candidates for one state Supreme Court seat on the ballot.
Vote. Then tune to your local Civic Media radio station for coverage you won't find anywhere else.
It kicks off at 7 p.m. with a special As Goes Wisconsin.
Then at 8, News Director Terry Bell has results with reporters checking in from around the state.
Election coverage live Tuesday, April 4th, starting at 7 on your local Civic Media radio station, streaming on the Civic Media app.
VA has a new life insurance program for veterans with service-connected disabilities called Veterans Affairs Life Insurance, or VA Life. VA Life benefits include up to $40,000 in coverage, no medical questions to enroll, and no time limit to apply if you are age 80 or under. Veterans can apply, receive an instant decision, and manage their policy online. Learn more about VA Life or apply online by visiting va.gov/life-insurance. Protect those who matter most with VA Life Insurance.
This is the story of a very special woman. Just a few knew about her superpowers. In a matter of seconds, she turned herself into a great mathematician. She masqueraded as a regular person at work, but as a superhero at home. Everyone knows her as Gabriella. I still call her Mom.
Your hero needs you now, and AARP is here to help. Find the care guides you need to help, complete with tips and resources, at aarp.org/caregiving.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Moving Day, a walk for Parkinson's, is happening around the country. Together we can unite in the fight against Parkinson's disease in a safe but exciting and fun way. So let's get moving. Join the Parkinson's Foundation to learn more and register at movingdaywalk.org.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Saturday and Sunday at 1 on Civic Media and the Civic Media app.
You were supposed to get a colon cancer screening, but stuff came up.
We did have to pick up the twins from practice.
But on the way, we hit a giant pothole. Over on
if you are 45 and older, don't let but stuff get in the way of your screening. Visit the Colorectal Cancer Alliance at ccalliance.org.
But then...
from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, an interesting story over at TechCrunch. They're writing about Twitter. He's written, since Musk took over, he has set about dismantling everything that made Twitter valuable, making it his mission to drive out expertise, scare away celebrities, bully reporters, and on the flip side, reward the bad actors, spammers, and sycophants who thrive in the opposite environment. An information vacuum, they say. He goes on to say, it almost doesn't matter if this is deliberate sabotage by Musk or the blundering stupidity of a clueless idiot. The upside is just the same. Twitter is dying. And on April 1st, they will be removing all of the legacy blue check marks and all of the people who want to own the libs. They can pay their 8, 9, 10, 11 bucks, whatever it is, to get their very own blue check mark with 6 followers and the most hateful rhetoric possible. Going to be very entertaining and interesting to see how this plays out. But here to share some thoughts on the whole situation and maybe try and change my mind on where we're going with it, I've asked my good friend David Yankovich to come share some thoughts. He's a Democratic strategist and very popular Twitter user. David, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me again, Rick.
So what do you think as of April 1st? And I got to tell you, I would have waited to April 2nd and then maybe thought it through and go, no, I'm just kidding. What do you think? They're going to remove all of the legacy blue check marks like that I've had for years and going to just sell it out there?
You know, this is probably, I've probably done at least like 70 shows with you. And I think in those 70 shows, you and me maybe have disagreed like 3 or 4 times. This is going to be one of them.
Yeah. We're on the opposite sides of this.
Yeah, we are. That's what I'm saying. This is going to be a good one. So, I mean, this is where I'm at. I'm all for everybody out there that wants to, that says screw it. You know, I like what Ron said. You know, I like that they're putting the pressure because Elon Musk, he's reversed before when there's massive pressure. He's caved and that kind of stuff. I mean, this is going to kill Twitter. It really is. But on the other side of it, in political campaigns, I mean, the president, we're getting ready to run for re-election in a time when we can't get our message out in the first place. And your analytics are killed if you don't pay for it. Like our campaigns out there, that's a big mistake to not be doing. And nobody can afford $10,000 a month like the organizations I work with and things like that. You know, for that piece of it, I mean, it's ridiculous. But if you're running for office and you're especially the presidential campaign and you're getting 1/20th of the traction that you normally would be or that everybody else is going to get, you need that. We can barely get that message out now.
But what does it matter, David, if you're getting a message out to people who hate you? I see it as the vast majority of people who right now have bought on to the blue check mark are people who hate you to begin with. And the only reason they've bought the blue check mark is to own the libs and to be able to make it worthless. They've taken something that had some value. They've made it basically worthless. And they're going to sell it to somebody for $8 who's got 6 followers. I got to tell you, I'm glad Elon has taken a $44 billion company and made it a $20 billion. If he keeps up, and I hope he does, I hope he takes it down to a $10 billion company.
I mean, you know, there's a lot there that you're saying that's right, but on the other side of it, we don't have a viable alternative. We don't have another place that we can go on a national level where we can organize. And everybody can tell me Sprout Social is going to do it, or Mammoth, or like whatever the other ones are coming up with, but we're not there yet. So all these people who've been on Twitter and built 12 years worth of 13 years of their followers, and they're in hundreds of thousands or doing all that stuff, they don't have anywhere else to go. So, I mean, that's a big problem in itself. And we have to be able to get the message out, and we have to stay on Twitter, because our persuasion to be able to win elections is going where the Republicans are. You know, it's not Truth Social and all that stuff. I'm totally with that piece of it. But right now, we don't have another place for us to be able to go and organize to get that message out to any of it. So, I mean, it's hugely important to the campaigns and the politics until there's another alternative, and then everybody can tell Elon Musk to take a hike. I'd say it differently if we were on the Saturday podcast. And
yeah, yeah. No, I got that. But I also see this as socialism for the rich, because what you've now got is you've got, you know, Elon Musk saying he's going to come out and he's going to exempt 10,000 of the most followed companies and organizations from the fees, the anywhere between $1,000 and $100,000 a month, hit the 10,000 chosen. And I keep going, so wait a minute, you're going to get 8, 10, 9, 11, 12 bucks, whatever it is, we're going to have to pay for this. Again, free speech, we're going to have to pay for this free speech while you're giving it away to these big corporations that he gets to choose. Again, I don't want to be any part of this game.
Yeah, and no one wants to be a part of this game. And it, I mean, this is such a big mistake that, I mean, we've already seen it, $45 billion company down to $20 billion. Like, he's halved it, and he's done it in less than 6 months. I mean, this is going to be a Twitter killer. And I totally agree with everybody out there who's boycotting it on their personal accounts and doing that stuff. All I'm saying is my job in politics is hard enough to get that message out and hard enough to get people and reach them and do everything else without having 1/20th of the traction. And $8 or whatever it's going to be is nothing compared to the billions of dollars that they're putting on paid digital and doing that stuff and advertising. And that's what this is going to force the campaigns to do. They're going to go in and they're going to put more money into paid, and it's not going anywhere. It's just a banner on the top of a page. They're not going to get into organizing. They're not going to try to get the message out. That's a big problem already. So I'm with you on everything.
As a digital strategist, you and I have had these conversations for years that you don't think campaigns are spending enough money on digital already. This just seems to me to be one of these things that if you weren't spending it before when it was cheaper, I don't see how you're going to spend it now that he's making it even more expensive. So again, what we're then talking about is, you know, a bunch of people paying their 8, 9, 10, 11 bucks a month to bail out the next bit of right-wing insanity. Because all I keep seeing are people that I don't follow, that I don't agree with, that I don't want anywhere around me spewing nonsense at me constantly. And that's what's going to be left, I fear, or I believe.
It's going there. That's where it's headed. And I mean, that's where, you know, but the thing is we're not spending enough on social media. We're not spending enough on digital, but we're still spending, I mean, like the digital advertising and the ad buys, we're spending too much on. We're not organizing. We're not putting money into actually digital field. The same thing as what you do on the ground, but having it online. We're not doing peer-to-peer messaging or doing persuasion. That's the problem. You know, and the fact that we're going to be pulled back all the way now, we're not even going to be able to get the message out there. Like, I'm totally with you on most of what you're saying. It's just the problem is we don't have an alternative. We don't have another place where we can go and reach out and do this. And what's going to happen with the other social media networks is we're going to have a complete breakdown where you have social media for Republicans, social media for Democrats, and we're not going to be able to do any type of persuasion then. And then we're going to have to go back to old school, which is using organizers and going out there knocking on doors and canvassing and, you know, hit that again, which is like the olden days of doing it while they're doing, you know, $30, $50 million a month in organizing that we're not even touching. We have no way ability to compete already. And getting that message out is already hard enough. And the fact that, you know, we're going to walk away from this, it's, I mean, that's my fear. It's like we're walking away from organizing. And this is the fact that we're able to do even a little of it right now is critical. But after this, and that's why I think that eventually Elon's going to have to change his tune on this. Because, I mean, either someone in the shareholders or, you know, some of the other companies or whatever, but you're driving a $45 billion company into the ground. Maybe that's what he wants to do. And this is the way to get that done.
I said from the beginning, this was about destroying Twitter for exactly what you're talking about. This is about taking that one place where Democrats, the left, where a reasonable voice could be had, and destroying it. And he's doing exactly what everyone who thinks like I do thought he would do. He is making this a right-wing hate machine, and hate speech has gone through the roof. And it's for me, it's not worth salvaging, and I won't be any part of giving him any revenue to help him salvage the wreck that he's made. And I agree with LeBron James. I ain't paying him the five. He will, and I was interviewed by Bloomberg the other day, and I said he will not get a red cent out of me, not a dime. But I do understand what you're saying. I do want to change the topic real quick. You want to finish up on that? I'll give you the last word.
Last word I'll say is, hey, at the end of this, I got you to agree with me.
All right, there you go. You win that last part of the argument. Thoughts on Tuesday? Evidently, you got the Marjorie Three Names and Lindsey Grahams and everybody trying to ramp up the base for huge protests in New York around Trump being arraigned or coming in for booking and arraignment. Any thoughts?
Oh, what I loved earlier was Lindsey Graham saying about breaking windows and doing everything. Like, this is the guy who literally said that if Trump gets nominated, it's going to destroy the party and they'll deserve it. And he went from that to selling his soul and covering up for, like, probably criminal activity. I mean, they're lunatics. I mean, especially, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene and that. But, like, it's just unbelievable to me. And my thing is we don't know anything about this yet. We don't know exactly what the charges are going to be. We've seen, like, the list of them now, but I mean, we can't even get into this, and yet, I mean, we don't know enough. And, you know, one thing I do worry about, Rick, is, you know, for years and years and years, everybody on social and in the party, when's he going to be indicted? When's he going to get indicted? It's coming. It's not coming. Everybody's fighting. He might get acquitted here. Like, we don't know what's going to happen with this. We don't know what's going to happen in Georgia or what Merrick Garland's up to. But I want to caution people about getting too excited about stuff here. I'm seeing everybody losing their minds and celebrating, and nothing's happened yet. I mean, you know, and it's going to get nasty. This is going to be one of the ugliest things in American history. I mean, having a former president be indicted and have to plead not guilty in front of a criminal judge for felonies and misdemeanors. I mean, this is, and the Republicans are ramping up with violence already and threatening and doing everything else. Like, you know, this is not going to be as much as justice needs to be done, no matter what it is, this is not a good thing for the country. I do agree with some of that, but it's not good for the country because Trump has done things that are horrible for the country.
Well, it's not good for the country. And this is where I know we'll agree on this, is we've had administrations in the past who've gotten away with things that they've done. And we've had this let sleeping dogs lie mentality. And I think back to the George W. Bush years, the fact that, you know, we lied us into a war. We've lost, you know, thousands of soldiers and Americans. We've spent, you know, trillions in treasury, and nobody's held accountable for the lies and the deceit and the destruction of you know, norms on this planet. Nobody's held accountable. And it's about time that when you break the law, it's equally applied to everyone, no matter what status you are, whether you're the wealthiest guy in the country or the guy cleaning up the mess after that wealthy guy. If you break the law, you know, the old Beretta thing, if you do the crime, you do the time.
Yeah, I totally agree with you there. You know, here's my assessment and the way I'm looking at it is, no matter which way this goes, it's bad. You know, it's either the rule of law in this country doesn't matter anymore, or we have a former president who is corrupted and, you know, being criminally charged, and violence is breaking out, and the other side is losing their freaking minds on this. So, I worry about violence. I worry about, you know, the expectations of this. And also, I mean, here's another thing. This is a bad precedent. And I hate saying that, but, like, we are now a type of country where a president has been indicted. And, like, you know, I mean, that's kind of the, you know, banana republic type of countries, you know, where it's like, you know, former presidents are jailed by their new people or whatever. Like, I do worry about that going down the line in the long term, like when a Republican gets in the White House next time, or, you know, that. And I know this doesn't have anything to do with that, you know, on the, you know, Justice Department scale. And if there's crime that needs to be done, but on the other side, I mean, this does set a precedent. So, you know, I'm cautious about this, and I want to see what's going to come out of this. But from what I'm seeing or hearing from, you know, this, I mean, it's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of political, you know, noise making and everything else. Like, we have to wait and see what's going on.
Yeah. No, at the end of this, look, we've never had a president like Trump that has been involved in all of these other things. You know, policy wise, I don't want people being indicted or attacked for, you know, honest policy mistakes. You make policy decisions. That's one thing. I use the George W. Bush thing as they lied us into that war. They are still not telling us all the information that got people to vote for that war. And I think people need to be held accountable in those moments when it is deliberate.
Absolutely.
Honest policy decisions, you know, that's one thing. But when you're deliberately lying, that I got a problem with that. And look, you know, at the end of the day, I think across the aisle, people want that. I do find it really interesting, though, that the people who chanted lock her up for years, the people who are, you know, saying we should lock up Biden, the people who went after Obama, the people who even went after Clinton to lock him up, are now crying that somehow what they've wanted for decades is not what they really wanted.
Well, isn't it really interesting that, like, they were all screaming and they got Bill Clinton impeached for what he did, and yet Trump's, like, using hush money to pay off porn stars, and that their morality compasses are completely clear on that one. Like, it's the cult. It's not good. And I mean, and I want to be clear too on this. Like, if he committed it, and, you know, if the trial happens and the jury comes back with it, I mean, he belongs in jail. And I don't care who you are. I mean, when you're right for too long, you know, people aren't being held accountable in power. And, you know, I wish that, you know, not only this, but a lot of these business leaders and, you know, that kind of stuff that are screwing people and hurting people out there would be held accountable too. But, you know, usually if you're rich enough or you're powerful enough, you're untouchable.
I'm going to make the prediction I made from the very start, well before any indictment. He's never going to serve a day in jail. He's not going to get locked up even if he's found guilty. He will not spend a day in jail.
I do have a question, though. I wonder what happens with Secret Service protection if you're in prison. Like, if he does go to jail, like, does he have, like, Secret Service agents that have to be in the cell next to him, or do, like, they have to vote to, like, take that away? That's why I don't think he'll be in jail for that reason, you know, but
either whatever the reason is, he's not going to spend a day in jail. So for me, just the fact that he's tried and either found guilty or not guilty, whatever, that is a huge difference.
Yeah. And, you know, I definitely agree with that. And how are you going to put a former president in jail? We've never seen anything like any of this. So, I mean, everything that going forward from now is brand new in a precedent-breaking, barrier-breaking moment. And
see,
that,
now
that's
I have
Trump.
The punishment. I have the right punishment. He's got to live in a work. He's got to be under house arrest in a house that you and I grew up in a working-class house with no amenities, no servants, nothing. He's going to have to make his own meals, scrub his own toilet. And it's not going to be a golden toilet either.
I've been waiting for you to take a break so I could say golden toilet, damn it.
That's the punishment. Last question I've got for you on this. As a strategist, how do you see them spinning this? I expect him Tuesday to show up and make a mockery of it. I'm expecting a mugshot of him doing the thumbs up. I'm expecting the martyr and the victim. What would you do? What are you expecting? And how do you see this playing?
Like, what would I do if I was a Republican? Or
yeah, if you're advising him, what's the advice there for him?
Oh, man. I wouldn't be working for him. I'd be running the other way, because it's never a good thing when your boss is in jail.
Yeah.
But I would say that the data's really clear here. You know, the Republicans like him more being indicted and being arrested and all that. So, you know, play it up. He's going to be doing the thumbs up. I don't know if he's going to say if he's going to make a mockery inside the courtroom, maybe, but, you know, he's going to attack the judge online, and he's going to try to, you know, destabilize the trial and politicize it and everything else. And I'm going to tell you right now, going after the judge and insulting him and doing that is not going to bode well for him. And
that's just
a bad idea. And he will. That's, you know, because that's what he does. That's my prediction.
He's going to go after bailiff. He's going to go.
I think he's going to get found in contempt of court. At some point, I think that he's going to get himself in more trouble because he won't be able to shut the hell up online. That's mine.
And we'll see how that plays out and how that prediction bodes. David, as always, great talking with you. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Our good friend David Yankovich. I got to tell you, I'm expecting the fun, the entertainment. I'm expecting the mockery, all of that. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back.
are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Interesting little back and forth there. And look, I understand what David's saying about, you know, the campaigns need to get their message out. But it's not going to be the same Twitter. It's not going to be the same. It is going to be the algorithm that I guess they've made public now. And I guess within a couple of minutes, someone found out how they were making Elon Musk one of the most viewed people on Twitter, because it is really all about his ego. And look, if you spent $44 billion and lost, you know, more than half of that, at least you can feed your ego, right? At least that. $44 billion to destroy Twitter. And they tell us we can't raise the minimum wage. I'm looking at New York. Evidently, more than 300 business leaders and business organizations have sent a letter to the governor of New York to raise the minimum wage to $21.25 an hour and then index it for inflation so that it never gets eroded away. Understand, we haven't raised the minimum wage in this country since 2008. This was before Barack Obama. So didn't raise it at all in the 8 years under Obama, didn't raise it at all in the 4 years under Trump, and haven't raised it in the 2 years under Biden. And not going to for the next 2 years. The minimum wage is not going to get raised on the federal level. So you're looking at 16 years without an increase in the minimum wage, which means that all this inflation that we're seeing, that minimum wage is still pegged down there at $7.25. And I know. Rick, nobody's making that. They're making 10. I know people who are making 10, 11. It's not the 21, 25 that they're talking about in New York. Now, they're going to do it in two different waves, evidently. New York City, Long Island, Westchester. It would go up to 17 and a quarter on January 1st of 2024, and then incrementally make its way up to the 21, 25 by 2026. In the rest of the state, it would go up to $16 an hour on January 1st and then incrementally make its way up to $21.25 by 2027. So it's going to lengthen that time period a little bit to give the rest of the state to catch up. And look, I've always been a supporter of a prevailing wage idea. You know, minimum wage is one thing, and we should have a floor. But I've always been a supporter of a prevailing wage where we say, look, you know, we want to make sure that wages in an area are competitive and they don't get eroded away. And that you know, we compete on the right levels. You know, I go back to my belief in we should be unionizing every workplace so that workers have an opportunity to share in the profits that their labor creates. That coming back as fast as it needs to, probably not in my lifetime. And that's a sad thing. When I started working, union density in this country was about 25%. And from the mid-80s all the way till today, we're down to about 6.6% in the private sector. Corporate America, Republican and conservative Democrats have done a nice job of making it much more difficult to join and form unions and to be able to fight for some of this. So we're doing it. It has to be done on a policy level. And I like what California is doing with some of the sectoral bargaining stuff around the fast food industry. We should be doing that kind of stuff across the country to where your labor means something, returning reward to work to where, you know what, if you go, you put in your 40, you go, you work hard, you play by the rules, that you actually do get ahead.
that doesn't seem all that difficult to me. But we'll see where this goes in. We'll see where this goes in New York. Remember, you know, had the minimum wage kept up with just with inflation from the late 60s, it would be over $25 an hour. Had it kept up with productivity, well beyond that. So the wealth is there. It's just not being distributed. Let's take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1883. That was the day that cowboys went out on strike. The cowboys worked in the Texas Panhandle. Increasingly, the ranch land in the region was coming under the control of large corporate ownership. Cowboys saw their way of life changing. Work as a cowboy had always been hard. They often slept under the stars or in a tent. They worked long hours at tough physical jobs. At the end of a long day, all they had to look forward to was a simple meal of camp food. But it had been the practice that cowboys could retrieve part of their pay in newly birthed calves. Some cowboys were also allowed to round up unbranded cattle. In these ways, they could create small herds for themselves and get a stake at independence. But the new corporate owners clamped down on this practice. They also placed restrictions against cowboys gambling, carrying weapons, and drinking. Seasoned cowboys from three ranches gathered to plan a response to the changes. They penned a letter and sent copies to five large ranches. It read, in part, "We, the undersigned cowboys of the Canadian River, do by these presents agree to bind ourselves into the following obligations. First, that we will not work for less than $50 per month." 24 cowboys signed the letter, but the ranchers were able to hire scab labor. The strike ended in defeat. Change had come to the Panhandle, and not in a good way. I think
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Until recently, kids were thrilled when their parents said, "We're going to Disney World." But that was in the before times, before Florida's autocratic governor put Disney World under the control of his state's thought police, turning it into DeSantis World. Having made kid-friendly Disney kowtow to his own magic kingdom of right-wing ideological conformity, Governor Ron is now demanding that the entire Sunshine State convert to the darkness of DeSantis World. A major tactic in his push is to rewrite the state's school books to, quote, protect young ones from having to learn that such historical unpleasantness as racism and sexism have shaped their society and are still doing so. To advance Ron Think, he has rammed his Stop Woke Act into law, requiring teachers to soften or just eliminate references to America's racial problems. "Pretend it never happened" is Professor DeSantis' instruction. Indeed, one educational publisher obediently followed his dictate by rewriting the uplifting 1955 story of Rosa Parks confronting the flagrant institutional racism of Montgomery, Alabama's public bus service. Before DeSantis, the publisher told the story straight. Quote, "In her city, the law said African Americans had to give up their seats if a white person wanted to sit down. Parks would not give up her seat. The police came and took her to jail." Now, after DeSantification, here's the publisher's rewrite. One day, Parks rode the bus. She was told to move to a different seat. She did not. She did what she believed was right. No reference to her even being African-American or to the law requiring her to bow to any white person's demand for her seat. And no mention of police hauling her to jail because of the color of her skin. This is Jim Hightower saying, DeSantis World is where people's dream of social justice goes to die.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So good news for my friend John Fetterman. He has been discharged from Walter Reed Hospital today. Announced that he's feeling better. In fact, he said he's happy to be home. excited to be a father and the husband he wants to be and the senator that Pennsylvania deserves. He said, Pennsylvanians have always had my back, and I will always have theirs. He says, I'm extremely grateful for the incredible team at Walter Reed. The care they provided changed my life. And look, you know, I've talked about this before. You know, John's a big guy. John, you know, like me, where you've never had, you know, any problems, you know, dealing with, you know, the aftermath of a stroke. You know, I understand. You need a bit of time. You know, the campaign had took its toll. I give him credit for seeking the help that he needed, and I look forward to him doing some good things here in the coming years. Anyway, here to share some thoughts. Maybe you got a thought on this and the top stories of the day. I've asked our good friend Bob Ney, former Ohio congressman, political analyst, to come share some thoughts. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Well, thank you, Rick.
So what do you think of this? You know, Fetterman was off for several weeks, says he's now better, going to get back to work. Any thoughts?
Yeah, just a few. I mean, out there, a lot of people have said that the reason his medical records were not totally revealed, you know, line by line, there was a statement from the doctor, was because contained in there were things that would point to, quote, this happening, okay? I don't know if that's true. I'm just saying, you know, this is how the D.C. wheel turns. And that's coming from, you know, a lot of people wondering. I think that, you know, he should be credited, just as you said, for addressing this issue. Look, I was in Congress. You don't dare say you're going to go to a therapist back then. You don't dare do that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping things have changed. You don't dare say you're going to a recovery meeting years back, you know?
Yeah.
So, again, I'm hoping things have changed because if people are more willing, including serving in Congress, to get assistance when they need it and help, then they're going to be a better person and a better, you know, servant for the people. And now with Fetterman, he's, you know, taking his time. He's had help, and so I think people need to give him credit for that. And we'll just, you know, see how it goes and how he can function in the Senate and do his job.
No, some of the stuff that I watched online, just cruel, and you know, yeah, the kind, well, sure, of, you know, just, you know, look, social media has turned into a place where people are their absolute worst versions of themselves. So I'm not surprised by it at all.
It's easy to be tough and snarky and mean, and, you know, when you're sitting at a computer and you're not facing somebody,
yep,
you know?
Exactly. Especially someone as imposing as John is. John makes me look like a small guy. So there is that. But I'm wishing him the best, as well as Giselle and the kids.
Right.
Because, you know, like you said, it took courage to do this. Let's get to the top story of the day. Evidently, Trump's going to surrender himself on Tuesday. You've got Marjorie Three Names and at all saying they want big protests. The Trump Show is back.
I don't think there's going to be a lot of violence. I really don't. I said that yesterday on radio. I said it this morning, and I'll say it now. I just don't see it happening in some wide-scale basis. Now, there's going to be anger and some protests and, you know, things of that nature, but I just don't see the violence end to it. In fact, a lot of Trump supporters, and I talked to tons of people today, I tried, Rick, on a wide variety to talk to people that hate him, that like him, that are in the middle, you know, et cetera, to get a feel for this. And in general, some of the Trump people are like, okay. Some are, quote, outraged, but some are like, all right, you know. Now, there might always be somebody that does something. This happens with anger and protests and things, but I don't think in general. Now, a couple of things. You know, I was never handcuffed, and I said to my attorneys one day, I said, you know, why am I not handcuffed? And they said, well, number one, the government wanted to keep the trial out of Ohio if we went to trial. They did everything they could do to do that. And number two, they didn't want to handcuff you. It would give you sympathy. I said, really? They go, yeah. You know, oh, they're in handcuffs. So he's not going to be handcuffed. There's not going to be that type of deal. There are going to be standard things that's going to happen to him. It's going to be fingerprinted, et cetera, but it's going to be under the guidance of the Secret Service. This is a bit unique, is it not, you know?
Yeah.
Now, this is another interesting thing. I heard this from a couple of people today, and I heard it on an online show, and I think people have got to be kind of cautious with this just for the spin factor, where a couple of friends said, he did all these things. He got away with all these things. They needed to get him on something. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah, no.
Take each case separately.
Right.
Each case is a separate animal. This was campaign. There's a January the 6th. There's a Georgia. I said, these are, you don't say, okay, well, had to get him somewhere. Let's get him on this one. This is potentially the tip of the iceberg. I've always said New York was his problem. You know, I felt that for a long time.
No, you've been on that all along. As I was saying, Georgia is the real problem, but you know, yeah, we'll see. Could be both of them.
well, yes, there's no doubt. But I knew New York. I mean, 2016, I said New York was a problem. That's before I knew who was a prosecutor, who wasn't, or who did what or who didn't. You know, it's a problem for him. This has, you know, two aspects to it, and one is the legal side of it. I'm not a lawyer. I do, in the back of my mind, this is here, Justice Department chose not to prosecute this. Is that because it was weak, or is that because Merrick Garland didn't want to get into it? You know, I don't know.
No, I think this was a state-level crime as well, so they figured, let it go down to the state.
Yeah. Right. January the 6th is up to Garland. I seriously don't think anything's going to come of classified documents. That water is too muddied. I just don't see anything coming of that. January the 6th, yeah, potentially. I think Georgia is the next potential step. Now, if that happens because you have Republicans in Georgia, so you can't, well, he can claim witch hunt, but you have Republicans in Georgia. If Georgia happens and you have two of these going basically at the same time, that is a problem for Trump, a problem in perception also.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Now, you've done campaigns for years. You're somebody that I think is really good at this. How if you're advising him, what's the demeanor? I think he's going to go in and make a mockery of it. I'm expecting him to do a Tom DeLay, big cheesy smile, maybe even the thumbs up. But I'm curious, what would you advise and what do you think you'll see?
Because he is Trump. And, you know, they used to say, let Trump be Trump. Because he is Trump, you can keep the, quote, fighting spirit. I'm gonna fight the deep state, blah, blah, blah. But my advice to him would be to take a different turn, and that would be to campaign on, you know, dismiss it when you go to the podium. Okay, you know, witch hunt in New York. By the way, here's what I care about, and hit the issues,
right.
You know, bread and butter, the wallet, the money the working people put in it, the money the government takes out, you know, the whole scoop. My advice would be for him to carry on a campaign on issues and stop the 2020, stop the steal, and stop talking about Manhattan. You know, go ahead and, you know, stay aggressive. I'm innocent. I'm this. I'm that. This guy's a Soros guy. Whatever he wants to say. But I would put another side to this. I really would.
Yeah.
And I would tell him, and I know this is, I don't even know why I'm making this statement on your show. I'm going to be so foolish. Show a little bit of humility.
Oh, that's
show
never going to happen. No.
Okay, see, I told you. it was foolish, you know. You should just say, shut up. What's wrong with you?
No, but this plays into the...
But you asked me what I'd tell him.
No, that's what I would tell him, but what I know he's going to do is not that.
Right.
Because, you know, the thing is, and you're right, there are people out there who go, oh, we got him. You didn't get him. He's been indicted. Okay, he's going to have his day in court, and he's going to have the best team of lawyers who don't mind not getting paid that money might not buy.
You know, when my lawyer sat down with me and they said, look, you want to go to trial? We think the case is weak. We were prosecutors, federal prosecutors. We wouldn't have prosecuted this case, blah, blah, blah. And I said, the bottom line, how much money do I need? And they said, $3.2 million. I said, plea? How do you spell plea? 3.2. If I had money, I probably would have, you know, went to court. But he's got, you know, money. He'll raise money. You're right. He may not pay them, but he will raise money off of this. No question, you know, about it. There's a couple of legal weirdo things here, though, too. How do you start the process of selecting a jury? Who did you vote for? Is that how you start this?
Maybe you do it by like a lottery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you just put all the names in a basket and have Trump pick out 12 names.
Because I don't, you know, the lawyers are going to argue they can't get a fair trial. They're going to argue statute of limitations. They're going to, you know, argue all kinds of different things in the beginning. They're going to argue that. Then here's this second thing, and I reminded a friend of mine today, and she gasped. I said, look, there's two facts of life. I can run for Congress again. I can't run for mayor of my local town. I can't run for state senator, township trustee. I can run for Congress, though, with a felony.
Yeah.
He can run for president.
Sure.
He can run convicted.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other question. Let's say he is convicted, and I'm not sure that that's going to happen. I have said from the start he's never going to spend a minute in jail.
Well, that's true, even if he's convicted. That's true.
But let's say he is convicted and he does go to jail. What happens to the Secret Service? Does he lose Secret Service protection, or do they have to have two guys walking with him through Rikers?
No, they would have to do something because I've never shared this before, but I don't mind telling you privately. The government said to my lawyers, "How about he goes to a camp in Florida with 100 people?" My lawyers told me there's a camp in Florida. I'm like, no. Well, they said, what do you mean? I said, hey, I might hate those other 100 people. I'll go to a place where there's 1,300 people, you know. But the reason that was even proposed, I don't care what you did, you know, if you go into prison and you're, you know, elected official or something, or to his level of the presidency, and something happens to you, guess what, you know?
Yeah, nobody wants to be in charge of that prison.
Not going to be good for the prison. Not going to be good for the warden.
Yeah.
Not going to be good for the guards.
I said this from the beginning, house arrest, but it should have to be, and I've amended this, it should have to be in the house I grew up in. He can't leave that house. There's no maid. There's nobody to clean the golden toilet. He's got to make his own food. He's got to do his own laundry. That, I think, would be the...
Now, let me give you one better. How about this? You know those striped vests with the orange and the, you know, yellow?
Yeah.
Right? You know, when you're on the highway?
Yeah.
How about he has to pick up litter around the White House? Huh? Come on. Be creative.
And then go back to the house I grew up in? Yeah, I'm in favor of that.
Yeah.
Give him
yeah.
a little work now, release so he can get some exercise? Sure.
Now, this is the weirdest America I've seen since 2016. You and I talk all the time. If we went to HBO and said, we're going to write a script where this guy comes down from Trump Tower, they would throw us out, right?
Yeah.
And then we would add in the script, a former president is indicted. They would throw us out. How about if Joe Biden pardons him? about that?
Yeah, no, and it's not out of the realm of possibility. I mean,
I'm throwing that out there. For the quote, good of the country. What would Trump say?
And then he wouldn't take it. No way. Because he's then got to admit he was wrong.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's kind of a beautiful move, controversial, but you never know in America today.
So now my mind is going in this other direction of, you know, maybe you speed this trial along. If he is convicted, Biden then offers to pardon him before the election. And then he's got to turn it down because, you know, he's got to. Wow. So that would be fun.
You know, Biden does a speech, you know, for the good of the country, we need to show grace.
Yeah.
I mean, I could work. You and I could sit down and write the speech. It'd be the speech of a lifetime. I mean, really. So I'm laughing, but I'm telling you, it would be absolutely fascinating to at least have offered that for the, quote, good of the country, that it would happen. Then there's the other thing, too, if he's convicted, and I agree he'll never spend a day, they would have to take Secret Service with him. They can't just, you know, throw him in there. But he can go to the appeal. And don't you think that runs into the next election?
Yeah.
Well, the election's going on.
Yeah, no, I don't expect him to go to trial before this upcoming election. Unless the case is weak, and then obviously his lawyers would want to speed that through so that he could say, look, I'm the Teflon Don, and you know they didn't get me, and I took them on, and I won. A whole bunch of messages could come out of that. But we'll see. We'll see how it plays out, because, again, we haven't seen the indictment.
Yeah, there's going to be multiple counts. Then there's one other thing here. number one, no one's above the law. Members of Congress go to prison. They're indicted, convicted. Some are set free. Presidents aren't above the law. So this isn't the end of America. It's precedent setting, but it's not the end of America. If you love Donald Trump, it's not the end of America. If you hate Donald Trump, it's not the end of America. So the point, I guess, is no one's above the law. But speaking on a political basis, I'm not sure if, you know, if I were a Democratic operative behind-the-scenes person that I'd really want this to happen in Manhattan. I'd rather have federal or Georgia.
You think? Because ultimately, isn't Manhattan his home? I mean, hasn't he basically bribed and greased every palm in Manhattan?
Yeah, the case and the Stormy Dan. I'd rather have a Georgia grand jury come out
or Central Ohio.
Yeah, or Central Ohio or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
But it's very fascinating, and it's going to have twists and turns, and he's going to use this to control the media. This is one other thing, too, though. This is still a court case. He needs to be very careful from this point on. This is my one piece of advice I give to him of what he says.
Yeah.
I mean, very careful.
Well, we know one thing for sure. The Trump show is going to get ratings.
Absolutely.
It's going to give us things to talk about for the next year and a half. I got one other thing I wanted to ask you about. I saw this story over at The Guardian, a completely different topic. Evidently, Russia is now taking charge of the UN Security Council. How is that possible?
In the past, I can't remember, who did what, but they used to have, I think at one time, I don't know, Ron was head of the human rights component, you know what I'm saying? Saudi Arabia or, something like that. And so I think, they've taken goofiness to a new level, and they have. They've taken charge of the UN Security Council. And, look, they're doing all these war crimes in Ukraine, everything they're doing against people, murder, rape, everything under the sun. And now they're, I thought it was an April Fool joke, of what's happening. This is so sad. And, of course, the United States is urging Russia to conduct yourself professionally when it assumes the role.
Yeah.
The U.S., Britain, France, and the supporters on the, on the council had are going to show their disapproval. But I guess there's nothing you can do about it the way this council's formed. Right,
Crazy, crazy, absurd.
If they give them the power to organize their own sessions. I think it's crazy that they're even still on it.
Exactly.
I
just thought it was one of those sad but comical kind of things.
Right. Terrible.
Amazing
really
stuff.
Really terrible.
Just like the script that we're living out right now. Absurd.
It is.
Bob, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff.
Thank you.
Our good friend Bob May. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. A couple of your emails on board next. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1933. The nation was in the grips of the Great Depression. Long bread lines formed each day in major cities across the nation, with at least one in four people out of work. The crisis deepened as the Dust Bowl ravaged U.S. farmland, crippling farmers and limiting food production. In response, the newly elected president, Franklin Roosevelt, launched his New Deal programs, signing into law one of the most popular parts of the New Deal, the Civilian Conservation Corps. The CCC was a massive public works program. Unemployed young men, ages 18 to 26, were eligible to enroll and to be put to work. They earned $30 a month working on public works projects. Participants lived in camps near the projects and had to send $25 home each month to their families. The size and scope of the initiative was truly staggering. At its peak, 500,000 men were put to work from 2,600 camps across the country. In all, 3 million men participated during the 9-year program. The camps were segregated, and 250,000 African-American workers formed 150 all-black crews. During the program, CCC crews planted nearly 3 billion trees, constructed 470 fire towers, built 97,000 miles of fire roads, and constructed facilities at 800 parks. If you see a stone bridge or a picnic shelter at your favorite park, look very closely. You very well might find a plaque describing how the project was completed by the Civilian Conservation Corps. The program indelibly improved the infrastructure of the nation, and it gave participants the dignity of work and the hope for a better tomorrow. Today, as the media reports lingering unemployment and crumbling U.S. infrastructure, just imagine what a program like the CCC could accomplish today, if only we had visionary leaders willing to enact. So, California, look, you know, this is really an aggressive move by the Biden administration. Evidently, according to the New York Times, the Biden administration has granted authority to California to require that half of all, you know, semis, garbage trucks, you know, cement mixers, you know, the big heavy vehicles sold in the state, half of them must be all electric by 2035. I mean, that's really really ambitious, considering we still don't know how well they're going to hold up over the long term. But, you know, hey, this is, you know, look, California's got some pollution problems. This is a way to clean up some of the dirty stuff. I know the Owner Operators Association is going to lose their ever loving freaking minds, because this kind of a mandate is going to harm smaller firms. The big companies, they'll be able to absorb the costs, and that the smaller, the individuals, the mom and pops, they're going to struggle. So I think there's got to be a way to help make that transition. Just my thoughts, but something to keep an eye on. I wanted to get to a couple of emails. Marcus writes, Rick, hear your show today, and love that you're talking about the upcoming UPS contract fight. Brother Hooker was spot on. Have you don't know how hot, that doesn't make sense. I think he meant you don't know how hot it is in the back of a big brown box in August in Georgia here, which I can't imagine. He says UPS is always pushing to move faster, get more done, and move more efficiently, like we're all trying to screw them. But have you ever driven in downtown Atlanta? He says it's brutal. The micromanagement is out of control. And look, I've driven in downtown Atlanta. Yeah, it is bad. Bob writes, Rick, love the show, brother. A coworker turned me on to it. I listen daily. Brother Richard hit the nail on the head. We are ready to strike. Looking forward to Brother O'Brien and Zuckerman leading us to a better contract. You are right about that. It's not about the money. It's about respect. Thanks for getting it. That was Bob. And Anthony sent me an email, you know, talking about his time at UPS. He retired a couple of years ago, not by choice, but he retired. He said, look, the last contract everyone was disappointed in. He's hopeful that the new one will bring some stuff. He says, quote, you're correct about the vehicle's temperature environment. We had a guy die of heat stroke one summer, and one bad winter, I got frostbite on both feet and nearly lost two toes. He said, my truck was made in 1986, no power steering either, which cost me two carpal tunnel surgeries. Many drivers retire with permanent disability ratings, meaning we got to get an attorney and they negotiate a monetary settlement. He said, my last day, not planned at UPS, I tore two ligaments in my ankle in front of a customer, and Liberty Mutual, their insurance company, refused the claim, even though I had a witness. He said, I had to fight them with an attorney, and on top of that, after I won, I could not sue them for lawyer fees because of workers' comp. And this is, again, another one of those anti-worker things that companies do. You get hurt on the job, they're going to fight you. Here in Pennsylvania, it means you're going to lose 20% of your wages right off the top to lawyers who have to go. They got to eat too. But in cases where the workers are clearly harmed on the job, these companies fight them no matter what. Something I know a little bit about and I've seen happen numerous times. So, you know, Anthony, I appreciate the email. Again, this is all part of the reason why, you know, in this moment, we should be looking at working class issues. And thanks to the three brother Teamsters there at UPS for chiming in. I want to hear your thoughts. You got comments, questions, comments, something on your mind. I want to hear it. If I don't know it, I'll find the answer to it. Hate email goes to the top. Always love that. I appreciate you tuning in. You miss any part of the program, podcast, wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Thanks so much for being here.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CV Green.